I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show on BBS Radio Station 3 and www.holistichealthshow.com. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. On this show and the next, I will interview four authors with different approaches to weight loss. I had planned to continue with energy as an aspect of holistic health from the last show, but I was unable to arrange the guest I wanted so quickly, so I will go back to this on a future show with guests like Donna Eden. My first guest tonight is Dr. Seth Roberts, who will tell us how we can lose weight by adding one item to our diet. Both he, his friends, and many on his website have had success with this approach. Seth is a professor emeritus of psychology from the University of California at Berkeley and a New York Times best-selling author of The Shangri-La Diet. He has written many articles on health, nutrition, and weight loss, and is on the editorial board of Nutrition. He spends his time between Berkeley and China. His website is www.shangrila-diet.com. That is shangrila-diet.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Seth, and I look forward to an interesting discussion on weight control.
Thanks.
As you probably know, Seth, obesity is fast becoming the major health preventive problem in the United States, overcoming smoking that is currently number one. And some of the older statistics show that a third of all adults and a fifth of all children in the United States are obese. And despite all of the books and the theories and so forth, the problem continues. Consequently, I wanted to spend a month looking at different approaches to weight loss because it has such a major impact on health. Your book was one of the books that I found very interesting. Now, as an educator, I always like to develop a theoretical framework for anything I publish and also for anything that I taught students. So I especially like the fact that your book was based on a theory that you had developed. Can you tell us about the theory and how it evolved?
Yeah, the theory came in a way from my teaching of introductory psychology at UC Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave a bunch of lectures, and one of the lectures was on weight control.
Mm-hmm.
So to write that lecture, I read a bunch of scientific papers about weight control, and I came up with some interesting ideas. So that started me moving in a little unusual direction. And then I was going to expand my introductory psychology class into a book. I was going to write a book based on my class. And I decided I would write one of the sample chapters on weight control.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, I contacted several researchers. And one of them sent me a pile of reprints. He had written, 20 papers.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me copies of his 20 papers, and I read through them. And one of his papers really struck me and gave me the idea of my theory. His name is Israel Ramirez. He was a researcher in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because of his paper, he had some surprising results about rats with rat experiments. And it was his paper, his research findings, that suggested to me my theory of weight control,
mm-hmm.
Which was quite different than what people had before. The theory was that we have a set point that controls our weight.
Mm-hmm.
And the set point slowly goes down when we're not eating, but when we eat something, our set point goes up. Now, the interesting part of it is that how much the set point goes up depends on what we eat. And in particular, the set point goes up more when we eat a flavor that's associated with calories.
Oh.
And when we eat the same flavor and it's not associated with calories.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, it's how strongly the flavors of your food
mm-hmm.
are associated with calories. The flavors of your food are just the smell of your food, basically. So most smells, we don't like them immediately. We
mm-hmm.
don't like them the first time we encounter them. We learn to like them. I mean, we like sweetness, we like saltiness. Those are tastes. We like those right away.
Mm-hmm.
But flavors, which, in other words, smells we don't like right away. Smells we come to like because we learn to associate them with calories. So, for example, a Coke. The first time you drink a Coke, it just tastes weird. Why does anybody like this? You might think it tastes like medicine. But after you've had a Coke many times, the smell of the Coke has become associated with the calories, the sugar in the Coke. So
mm-hmm.
that's why people like Coke so much, because they've learned to like it. They don't start off liking it. Anyway, it's those learned associations with, that push our set point up. So the more you have food that you've learned to like, and the more you've learned to like it, the higher your set point will be. And your set point basically determines how much fat you'll have on your body, because you're going to be hungry until you eat enough so that you have enough fat to mm-hmm. be at your set point. Mm-hmm. So if your set point wants you to be 100, if your set point wants you to be 200 pounds, it's going to be very hard to be 195 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But if your set point goes down to 180 pounds, well, it's going to be very hard to be more than 180 pounds. It'll be impossible. You just won't have any appetite.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the comparison of your set point and your actual weight determines whether you're hungry or not. So if your actual weight is above your set point, you're not going to be hungry. But if your actual weight is below your set point, you will be hungry. You'll be hungry until you eat enough to push mm-hmm. up your fat to your set point. So anyway, it all depends on your set point. And what was new about my theory was not the idea of a set point. That was an old idea. What was new about my theory was how the food you eat affects your set point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in this really non-obvious way that it has to do with the strength of flavor-calorie association. In the field of nutrition, they're barely aware of this kind of learning,
mm-hmm.
much less understand how it affects us. But anyway, the experiment by Ramirez made it clear to me that this kind of learning was important in controlling our weight.
Mm-hmm.
And they explained a lot of facts, and it led me to discover the very unusual effect behind my book, The Sangalore Diet.
Mm-hmm. And the set point has nothing to do with absorption, is that correct?
No, it's just it has to do with how much you like the flavors of your food.
Oh, because I know that if it's best to eat a large breakfast because your body metabolism is higher in the morning, and
I don't think that's going to have much effect on your weight. If the fact that there's a set point is kind of like having a thermostat in your room. You know, you set the thermostat to a particular temperature. Maybe that temperature is 70 degrees. Well, because of that, If you do different things like open the windows, well, it might get a little bit cooler, but mm-hmm. the heaters are going to kick in and they're going to warm up the room to compensate for the heat that you've lost going out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with a set point. If you just don't eat, or if your metabolism goes a little bit higher, that's not going to help you very much, because you're just going to get more hungry than you would have gotten otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So if your set point is 180 degrees and you skip breakfast, well, if your weight is 180 and your set point is 180 and you skip breakfast, well, it just means you're going to be hungrier. It doesn't mean you're going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to lose weight temporarily, but you're going to be hungry at the same time, so you're mm-hmm. going to eat more until you get back up to 180.
Okay.
So the only way to lose weight without pain, without suffering, is to lower your set point.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's very difficult not to lose weight if you lower your set point.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you develop the theory and then the diet, or did you develop the diet first?
Definitely the theory, then the diet. I first came up with the theory. And then I was in Paris, and something surprising happened. And
mm-hmm.
because of my theory, I interpreted the surprising event in a way that led me to my diet.
Mm-hmm.
The surprising event was that I lost my appetite.
Oh.
Now, I don't think I'm the first person to go to a strange place and lose their appetite, but for various reasons, I'm probably the only person to interpret it correctly, because I don't think most people thought of my theory. So
mm-hmm.
I had a strange event, and I had the theory, and the theory led me to understand why this strange event had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I explored, I when I got back home to Berkeley, I tried to figure out why I had lost my appetite.
Mm-hmm.
And it led me to come up with my diet.
And was that because of the smells and all?
Well, yeah. What happened in Paris was that I had lost my appetite, and that was really strange, because I think I'd been to Paris before and I hadn't lost my appetite, and I usually don't lose my appetite when I go to strange places.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't about being in a strange place. And it wasn't about Paris. So what was it? What was different? That was the puzzle. And it wasn't that I was sick. I wasn't sick. I was fine. It wasn't that something horrible had happened to me. Nothing horrible had happened. But there I was with a very, very little appetite, shockingly little appetite. I just couldn't bear to eat, even though I really wanted to eat. So that was a very strange thing that happened, that my appetite sort of suddenly vanished. And I thought to myself, wow, why did my appetite vanish? What is different? And then I thought, well, there is one thing. And that one thing was that it was hot. It was
mm-hmm.
really hot in Paris. Now, it can be hot in Berkeley and I don't lose my appetite. It's been
mm-hmm.
hot, you know, many times, and I've never lost my appetite like that. So it was something about being hot in Paris that was causing me to lose my appetite.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, oh, well, because it's been so hot, I've gone to drink some soft drinks to cool off. Now, I might do that in Berkeley too. But the difference was that in Paris, there was two differences between the Paris soft drinks and the Berkeley soft drinks. One was that the Paris soft drinks were unfamiliar to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to drink unusual stuff because I was in Paris, so I didn't just have the same stuff as in Berkeley. So the Paris soft drinks had unusual flavors. And second of all, the Paris soft drinks had sugar in them. They didn't have all this diet stuff we have in Berkeley.
Oh.
So I was drinking unfamiliar flavors with calories, with sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, well, that is different. If it was Berkeley, I might be drinking soft drinks, but they wouldn't have any sugar and they wouldn't be unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, maybe that's it. Because my theory said that if you eat unfamiliar foods, then you will lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose weight because you lose your appetite.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory said that unfamiliar foods cause you to lose your appetite. And I thought, well, that's really weird. I mean, nobody else would ever think that drinking soft drinks would cause weight loss. Everybody says the opposite. Everyone says they cause weight gain. But my theory did explain what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so my theory said that, well, these soft drinks, I mean, could it really be? And when I was back in Berkeley, I tested my idea by drinking sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
And so to make sure that the flavor did not become familiar, I just drank sugar water plain with no smell.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it was just the sugar in the water and, you know, no lemon, for example,
mm-hmm.
that has a smell. So I did that, and my appetite was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
I had no appetite for a long, long time, and I kept reducing the amount of sugar water because I kept being surprised how powerful the effect was.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I discovered that I could lose a lot of weight by drinking sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost about 30 pounds.
Wow.
In just 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it was astonishing. I've never lost my appetite so powerfully
mm-hmm.
for such a long period of time. And the only thing I changed was drinking the sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I ate food too.
Oh.
I just wasn't very hungry. I had to push myself to eat, and I didn't eat very much. So this is something very new in the world of weight control.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I discovered that if you drink sugar water, you can lose a lot of weight very easily.
Mm-hmm.
I was not in a hospital. I was not even particularly obese.
Mm-hmm.
Yet this sugar water had this really, really powerful effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I could explain it. So that was where the idea for the diet in the book came,
mm-hmm.
from this experience.
Now, I assume that the diet has something to do with changing the set point?
Yeah, the diet is a way to lower your set point.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, in the beginning I thought, well, other people will do it with sugar water, but a friend of mine pointed out to me that my theory predicted that any flavorless food would work, any
mm-hmm.
food that has no smell.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, if your theory is right, then olive oil, then there's some olive oils that have very little flavor,
mm-hmm.
extra light olive oil, they're called. And so they should work too, she said. And I tried it. I switched from sugar water to extra light olive oil,
mm-hmm.
and that worked. I kept my weight much lower, and I didn't have to worry about my blood sugar going too high. So
mm-hmm.
I did switch to extra light olive oil. So by the time I wrote the book, I gave both of those avenues for weight loss. In other words, you can either drink a certain amount of calories in the form of sugar water per day, or you could drink that same number of calories in terms of extra light olive oil per day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important to drink them between meals so they don't become associated with the other flavors that you're eating. So
mm-hmm.
you have to drink them between meals. But anyway, so you can do either one. And I think most people do the oil, although a few people do the sugar water still.
Mm-hmm.
I do the oil myself. I've been doing it, I think, for about 5 or 6 years now. So anyway, that's, in a nutshell, that's the diet. It's very, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
There's no food that you can't eat. You don't actually subtract anything from your diet.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't go out and eat junk food. You just eat the same food. Whatever you've been eating, just keep that the same, and then you'll find you eat a lot less of it.
Mm-hmm.
People uniformly say, oh, I got full so much faster. Oh, I didn't even want to eat the junk food. So on the Shangri-La Diet forums, there's thousands of comments like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you use a different oil? Like, I take a little bit of coconut oil, the pure virgin organic coconut oil. Every day, I'll just take a little scoop of it and eat it. Does that work, or does it have to be olive oil?
No, it can be any oil. It's just that if it has a smell, you need to get rid of the smell somehow. So I use flaxseed oil, and I get rid of the
mm-hmm.
smell by holding my nose. I have some,
mm-hmm.
I have some swimmer's nose clips.
Mm-hmm.
So I hold my nose shut with a swimmer's nose clip.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use any food, actually, as long as you close your nose with a swimmer's nose clip. Now, I use flaxseed oil because it has beneficial effects on how well my brain works.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you call it the Shangri-La diet?
I call it the Shangri-La diet because it's surprisingly good. The main reason I call it Shangri-La diet is that Shangri-La was a peaceful place. Shangri-La, of course, is an imaginary place. it was sort of a peaceful place away from the horrors of the world. And in Shangri-La, everybody's very calm. And when people would try my diet, one of the first things they said about it was that they put them at peace with food. They stopped thinking about food so much. They had these very intrusive thoughts. They would think about food every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes, they'd wonder, what am I going to have for dinner? When's my next meal coming?
Mm-hmm.
And they found that when they started my diet, those thoughts stopped. Now, this is very interesting because I did not tell them this.
Mm-hmm.
I did not say, oh, if you do this diet, your thoughts about food will stop. I never said a word about this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because it didn't happen to me. I did not have that problem
mm-hmm.
myself. But they did. And many, many people said that to me. And I think it's a kind of proof that the diet works because this had never happened to them before. The diet had caused a different kind of change in them than the previous diets they had tried.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you stop thinking about food, it's going to be a lot easier to lose weight.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I think that you tested some of this on yourself, but you've gotten also a lot of feedback from other people on how successful the diet has been with them. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. I started with myself, and then some friends tried it, and some of them lost a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did some little experiments. And then finally I wrote a book. And then after that, there was lots and lots of comments on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And there's thousands and thousands of comments. There's Shangri-La Diet Forums, which is at my website, which has many, many, many comments.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of feedback.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the successes?
Oh, I think that some people have lost about 100 pounds.
Oh, those they
would
have.
Be the biggest successes.
Oh.
You know, obviously that's a life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go from feeling miserable about yourself to feeling much, much better.
Right.
I don't know if it works to everybody, but honestly, it's not easy to pick out failures. The people who don't, it doesn't seem to work for are people who are thin to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
They weigh 110 pounds, they want to lose 5 pounds. Well, it might not work that well in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But if you weigh 250 pounds and you want to get down to below 200, it mm-hmm. works really well.
Right, right.
So my overall take is that the comments on the boards really back up what I said in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had a revision, and it was in the revised book that you talked more about the oil instead of the sugar water.
Yeah, exactly. From the hardback to the paperback, I increased the emphasis on oil.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned flaxseed oil. Is that also in the book?
In the paperback, yes. Yeah, that was one of the discoveries I made after I wrote the hardback.
Mm-hmm.
The value of flaxseed oil. I discovered it because people were talking about the effects of oil, and I thought, well, maybe it has to do with flaxseed oil. Anyway, I started taking flaxseed oil, and I noticed my balance improved.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't expected that. Nobody had said your balance is going to improve if you take flaxseed oil. I've never read that anywhere. But I measured it. I measured it very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, it really did depend on how much flaxseed oil I took. And I'm an experimental psychologist, and I did other tests
mm-hmm.
of my mental function, and it improved the other tests as well. So I think this is a really important discovery, that flaxseed oil supplies nutrients that we need to make our brain work its best. And I think it's omega-3 in the flaxseed oil,
mm-hmm.
because other people have found that fish oil has the same effect.
Right, right.
So fish oil and flaxseed oil give our brain more omega-3, And although I was eating what, you know, most people consider a healthy diet, but I was apparently not getting nearly enough omega-3 because I ended up taking about 3 tablespoons of flaxseed oil per day to get the best result.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of flaxseed oil.
Right. Now, I take an Ultra Omega 369, which is fish oil, flaxseed oil, and one other oil. And it's a very good anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, that's I noticed that, and so did my friends, that our gums stopped being reddish, they turned pink.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, it was very noticeable.
Oh, yeah. What has happened to the diet since the book was published?
Well, I think the main thing that happened was all the comments on the Internet that
mm-hmm.
showed how well it worked and showed
mm-hmm.
in great detail and talked about how it felt to do the diet. There's so many, many, many comments. In the book, I could only give, you know, maybe 4 or 5 or 6 perspectives
mm-hmm.
on that, but on the Internet, there's thousands of perspectives. So I think in the book, I presented an idea about weight loss that was different
mm-hmm.
from anything anybody had presented before.
Right.
Because I had a new theory.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a theory, and it seemed to work for me. So
mm-hmm.
it predicted, explained some unusual things. So that's why I wrote the book, because
mm-hmm.
I thought I could help people, and I already helped my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what I said in the book was confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was saying something very unusual, the experiences after the book were very unusual. Many, many, many people reported feeling, you know, differently than they had ever felt. Essentially, what I'm talking about with this, they stopped thinking about food so much.
Mm-hmm.
and they found it so much easier to lose weight than ever before. Lots of people have lost weight, but they usually have to do it in extreme ways. You know, like the Atkins diet is quite extreme, and Weight Watchers is a kind of difficult discipline.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. They always compare it to pushing a rock up a hill. Well, with my diet, it wasn't like that. You had to make some changes, but they weren't difficult. And in the book, I made a very unusual statement about it wasn't going to be so hard to lose weight. And I think it came true. I think it came true in thousands of cases. And
right.
You can actually read on the Internet. So to me, that was the main thing.
Right. Let me go back to the oil and ask you, Seth, does it have to be organic virgin oil, or can it be any olive oil?
If you just want to drink it without holding your nose, then it should be extra light olive oil, which is olive oil that has basically no flavor. If it's the extra virgin olive oil, which has a lot of flavor, that won't work. That will, you know, that won't work after a while.
Oh, it won't.
Okay, you can use that, but you should just hold your nose at the same time so that you don't smell it.
Oh.
It's the smell that's crucial. You do not want the smell.
Well, I noticed on the extra virgin organic coconut oil that I use, it says on there useful for weight loss.
I like organic coconut oil. I use it in cooking a lot.
Yeah, I like it too.
I don't remember seeing that on the. Maybe they did add it. Yeah.
Well, I buy it by the gallon.
Oh, really?
From Maui, I think it is.
Oh.
And I have it shipped to me, and I use it not only I eat it because I like the taste of it. But also, I use it on my skin because my skin had dried out so much from the years of using Dial soap.
Oh.
And so I switched to coconut oil soap and also coconut oil, and I just put some on my skin when I finish bathing in the morning.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me. So a lot of people reported their skin got better after they started drinking the oil regularly.
My
skin, too. It definitely got better. Much better.
My neighbor had a dog that was almost dead because the dog, I think, is like 19 or 20 years old. And I hadn't seen her in I'd seen her out, but I hadn't seen the dog for about 2 months. And here comes the dog, really perky. And I said to her, "What happened? Your dog is so perky." She said, "I've been giving him a tablespoon of coconut oil every day."
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, this would be so much easier than, as you say, the Weight Watchers or the Atkins. And I tried off and on the South Beach diet, which isn't quite as drastic as the Atkins. And it was developed, you know, as a cardiac diet, but it's still hard to follow it.
Yeah, I remember there was an article in Time magazine about how the author of the South Beach diet could not follow it.
Oh, the author couldn't either.
yeah, you know, but I've been following my diet for, I don't know, 8 years or 9 years. It's not very trouble. It's not very hard at all.
So, Seth, is there anything else you'd like to talk about the Shangri-La diet?
No, that covers all the bases.
Yeah, good. And would you tell us how people can locate your book and any other products you have?
Well, that's the only product I have, and they can locate it at online. Any bookstore, and it's usually in bookstores, I think. Then my website is www.shangri-la-diet.com, and at the forums, they can find an enormous amount of information and experience for the diet. And I have a blog that I talk about similar topics, how to, you know, health and nutrition and similar stuff.
Well, I appreciate very much your being on the show, and I look forward to talking with you again, Seth.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me talk on one of my favorite topics.
Great. Because we have a couple extra minutes on the show tonight, I would like to talk a bit about my website, www.holistichealthshow.com. The blog on this site lists all upcoming shows the week before they are broadcast on BBS, and also place a sample of the show following its broadcast. In addition, my site offers products for sale. My book, Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success, published in 2007, is available and is the blueprint for this show. It offers information on many topics covered here and puts them together for a holistic approach to health. I also have ebooks on cancer and other health topics and will add to these periodically. I'm also adding CDs on holistic health topics, so I hope you will check back often. My second guest tonight is Dr. Raymond Francis, who uses a different approach to weight loss. Raymond is a chemist graduating from MIT and serving as national chairman of the Project End Disease, the publisher of Beyond Health News, and the producer of the radio talk show, The Beyond Health Show. He is the author of Never Be Fat Again. His website is www.beyondhealth.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Raymond. You published a new book last year titled Never Be Fat Again, which some have called the first diet book worthy of reading. What makes your book different from all the other weight loss books?
Very simple. It's not a diet book. We know that diets don't work. We've done scientific studies, very, very large scientific studies, that have proven over and over that diets don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cannot lose weight by going on a diet, and that's what everybody's been trying to do. And they've been reading these diet books like the Atkins diet and the South Beach diet, and they've been going on the diets, and yes, you lose weight a little bit for a period of time. In
mm-hmm.
fact, you can lose, 10 to 15% of your weight on almost any of these diets. The problem is this: the weight comes back.
Right.
And usually you gain back more than what you lost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's bad enough that you don't lose the weight that you want to lose, but it's worse than that.
Mm-hmm.
Yo-yo dieting, which is what happens here, people lose weight, then they gain it back, then they go on another diet, and they lose weight, and they gain it back. Yo-yo dieting increases your risk of premature death.
Mm-hmm.
It doubles your risk of a heart attack. It does permanent damage to your immune system. So it is not a benign process. People are beginning to realize that now, and the sale of diet books has dropped sharply.
Mm-hmm.
So they're beginning to get the message that diets don't work, but the problem is they're throwing in the towel and giving up. They're saying, well, it doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not going to try.
Right.
And that's why I wrote Never Be Fat Again. Never Be Fat Again is not a diet book. It is a cause and effect breakthrough
mm-hmm.
that gives the reader an understanding of what causes overweight and gives them a prescription for permanently getting rid of that excess weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll explain to you what the real problem is. Now, you see, overweight, we look on overweight as a cosmetic problem, and we need a bigger dress or, you know, bigger pants. It's not a cosmetic problem. Overweight is a disease. It is a very serious chronic degenerative disease. Now, we don't look at it that way, but that's, biologically speaking, that's what it is. And people who are overweight will die younger than people who are not overweight.
Mm-hmm.
People who are overweight will have more of all kinds of diseases, including cancer and heart disease and diabetes. And people who are overweight have depressed immunity. It just goes on and on. If
mm-hmm.
you're overweight, you are sick. This is a chronic degenerative disease. So when you look on it as a disease, and then you look at what causes the disease, now by simply eliminating the causes, you eliminate the overweight, and you go back down to a normal weight, and you never gain that weight back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the beauty of my book, Never mm-hmm. Be Fat Again.
Mm-hmm.
It tells the reader what causes the overweight and how to permanently get rid of it, how to cure yourself of this disease.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see as the major problem with most approaches to weight loss?
Well, the problem here, all diseases, in fact, if people read my book, Never Be Fat Again, they'll learn that there's only one disease. And on the bottom line, biologically speaking, there's really only one disease, and that one disease is a cell that is not functioning the way it is supposed to. Now, all of us are made of these little units of life called cells. We all started life as one single cell in our mother.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're made of tens of trillions of cells. Well, when we started life as a single cell, if that cell was functioning, the way nature intended it to function, then we were healthy. If it was not functioning as nature intended, then we were sick. It's no different today. Now that we're made of tens of trillions of cells, if every cell in your body is functioning the way nature intended, you cannot be sick. You are healthy. It is not possible to be sick.
Mm-hmm.
The only way it's possible to be sick is when a large number of cells malfunction. Well, there's only two reasons why cells malfunction. Either they're not getting everything that they need, and we mm-hmm. call that problem deficiency, or they're getting something that they really shouldn't be getting, and we call that problem toxicity. So you can simplify it even more and say, well, there's one disease, a malfunctioning cell, and there's only two reasons why they malfunction. They're not getting enough of what they need, or they're getting too much of something that they don't need.
Mm-hmm.
So too much or too little. That's real simple.
Mm-hmm.
Once you understand this, you now have the power to prevent and cure almost any disease,
mm-hmm.
including overweight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give an example of what happens with overweight. There are two control centers in the brain that are very, very important for overweight disease. One of these control centers is your appetite control. And that turns on and says, I'm hungry. It turns off and says, I'm not hungry. The other is your fat storage control. You see, the body balances all kinds of things. It balances your temperature, keeps your temperature in a very, very narrow range, keeps your blood pressure in a narrow range, keeps your blood sugar. See, we balance all of these factors. Well, one of the things that we balance is how much fat you have in your body. So you have a control switch in the brain that tells the body to store fat if you need it, or burn fat if you don't need it. Store fat, burn fat. Well, what happens is that when these cells are deficient and toxic, what these two control mechanisms get jammed. So the appetite control gets jammed in the on position, and the fat storage control gets jammed in the on position, and so you are hungry all the time, and no matter how little you eat, you will store fat.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people come to me and say, I'm eating like a bird and I'm still gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens is the fat storage control is stuck in the on position.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how little they eat, they're going to be storing fat. So that's the problem. And all you have to do is address that problem. Now, deficiency. Most Americans are deficient, chronically deficient, in at least several nutrients. For example, more than 90% of the population is deficient in what we call omega-3 fatty acids. Well, a deficiency of omega-3 fatty acids will do what? Guess. Turns on the appetite control, turns on the fat storage control. A deficiency of calcium will do the same thing. Turn on the appetite control, turn on the fat storage control. So if you want to lose weight, what you need to do is you need to eat more. Only you need to eat more real food that contains these nutrients. Once the cells get the nutrients they need, then they turn off. But we don't do that, you see. We turn on the appetite. We eat a bad diet. We eat one that's deficient. The body turns on the switches. If it's not getting the nutrition that it needs, it thinks you're starving. So even though you're eating lots and lots of calories, you're not giving the body the nutrition that it needs. So it thinks you're starving, and it turns on the appetite and turns on the fat storage.
Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned some deficiency foods. And what are some of the things that causes the toxicity?
Well, this is really a unique contribution of my book, because if you read these popular diet books out there, you won't find them talking about the role of toxicity in overweight. And toxicity is a very important contributor to our epidemic of overweight disease. And why? Because there are toxins in our environment and in our food that do what? They turn on those two control centers. So it turns on the appetite control, turns on the fat storage control. glutamates. Now, glutamates are a class of compounds that are added to processed foods to enhance the flavor. About 80% of all processed foods contain glutamates. Most of our fast foods contain glutamates. And what are people eating today? Processed foods, fast foods, they contain glutamates. The glutamates turn on the appetite control and turn on the fat storage control. Artificial sweeteners like aspartame. Artificial sweeteners, the aspartic acid in aspartame, will turn on both of the controls. Pesticides turn on those controls. A number of prescription drugs turn on those controls. So you see, there's a variety of toxic chemicals in the environment that turn on those controls. And I'll give you a specific example. I had one man who came to me. He was 100 pounds overweight. And I looked at his diet. I looked at what he was doing. And here's a guy that was really motivated, really trying so hard. He was on an excellent diet.
Mm-hmm.
You looked at the diet. It was a good diet. He exercised every day, and he could not lose weight. And finally, he convinced himself that it was genetic.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way he was going to win. It was genetic. And just as a desperation, he came to me to talk to me so that I could tell him it was genetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, let's look at what you're eating. Well, he ate a good diet, but there were two things. One, he drank a lot of diet sodas.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, diet sodas contain aspartame, and aspartame will jam those two mechanisms. He was a bachelor, and he ate at a favorite Chinese restaurant. Guess what was in the food at the Chinese restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
MSG, monosodium glutamate. So he was eating glutamates all the time. So I said, well, look at here. You're every day you're eating two powerful toxins that will make you gain weight. So stop drinking those diet sodas. Get off of that Chinese food. And guess what? Those 100 mm-hmm. pounds melted away like an ice cube in the July sun.
Mm-hmm.
That's what anybody can do.
Do you recommend detoxing the body to get rid of toxins?
Absolutely. Detoxification is something we all must do.
Mm-hmm.
We're all in toxic overload today.
Right.
And every American is in toxic overload. The average person is bioaccumulating between 300 and 500 man-made chemicals in their bodies. And you see, our ancestors didn't have to do that. And so the body is not designed to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And these are what we call, most of them are oil-soluble toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And the body was designed at a time when we did not live in the petroleum age.
Right.
And now we live in the petroleum age. We have thousands, tens of thousands of man-made petroleum-based chemicals. Once they get into the body, we don't know how to get rid of them. The body doesn't know how to do that. So what it does is it stores them in
mm-hmm.
the fatty tissues. And each year, that level of the toxic level increases with each passing year.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, at some point, you've got enough gunk inside your cells to where the cells just collapse. I mean, they just don't function anymore. And then you have a very, very serious disease. So you don't want to be doing that. So with the toxins, there are three things you have to do. One, stop putting them in. Well, in Never Be Fat Again, I have a whole chapter on toxins
mm-hmm.
that tells you where they are and how to avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
And common things, something like toothpaste, for example. Toothpaste is a deadly poison. Shampoo, another deadly poison. Well, guess what? There are safe brands of shampoo. There are safe brands of toothpaste that don't poison you. People don't realize that, go to the store. Pick up a box of toothpaste at the grocery store. Read the label.
Mm-hmm.
Read the warning label. It says if you swallow any of this, you know, call the poison control center, you know, get a doctor, you know, call an ambulance, you know, don't swallow any of this.
Right.
One tube of toothpaste is sufficient to kill a small child. And those toxins, the mucous membranes in the mouth, are very, very permeable. And those toxins go right through the mucous membranes and then bioaccumulate in your tissues.
Mm-hmm.
So learn where toxins are. Stop putting them in. So the bad news news is we're all in toxic overload.
Right.
The good news is this. About 80% of that load is under our personal control.
Mm-hmm.
So with a little bit of knowledge and just a little bit of effort, you can reduce your toxic load by 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's worth doing. So stop putting the toxins in. Identify where they are. Stop putting them in. The second thing is we need to support our body's detoxification system. If you present one molecule of a toxin to the liver to be detoxified, it requires many, many molecules in order to detoxify that one. Well, where do the many, many molecules come from? Ultimately, from your diet. So if you're not eating a good diet, if you're eating the typical American diet, you're not getting the nutrients that you need to help the body's detoxification system to operate. So we need to improve our diets, and again, we tell you how to do that and never be fat again, and also take supplements to help support the body's detoxification system. So that's number two.
Mm-hmm.
And number three is to get rid of stored toxins, and the best way to do that is by taking saunas. And I sauna twice a week for an hour and a half, just for maintenance to keep my toxic levels down. And saunas, I have a friend who's an expert in toxins, and she says that saunas have become a household necessity. So it's no longer an option, it's a necessity. You need to get your toxic load down, and that's the best way to do it. So there's your three parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop putting the toxins in, make sure you have a good diet, a good supplement system to support your body's detoxification system, and three, actively get the toxins out.
Now, do you subscribe to any of the herbal detoxing methods, such as SEAC, which was used by Renee Case, the nurse in Canada that worked with cancer patients?
Yeah.
And many people are using this a couple times a year for a month as a method of detoxing.
Well, I think that the SEAC, and there are other approaches,
mm-hmm,
as well,
right,
do get rid of a lot of toxins.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get rid of all of them.
Right.
Particularly these oil-soluble toxins. They're,
mm-hmm,
very, very difficult to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to do a variety of things. And the saunas are very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in my own wellness process, your audience probably doesn't know that I almost died at age 48, and now I'm going to be 72 my next birthday, and I'm in perfect health. But taking regular saunas was one of the ways in which I helped myself to restore my health and to get as healthy as I am today.
Mm-hmm. Do you advocate an organic diet?
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as much as possible, eat organically grown food.
Mm-hmm.
I do that, but, you know, I can't be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
My diet is not 100% organic.
Right.
I wish it was,
right,
but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as possible, I eat organic foods. And you benefit in two ways. One, the organic foods have more nutrition, and we're all suffering from malnutrition.
Right, right.
And two, the organic foods have a lower toxic load, so you're helping to lower your toxic load. So very, very well worth the extra money to buy the organic foods. It's really a good buy, because,
mm-hmm,
you're what you're buying, you know, when you're buying food, you're not just buying something to stuff your stomach. You're buying nutrition. And when you buy organic foods, you're getting more nutrition. In fact, on average, you're getting 2 to 4 times more nutrition on average.
Right.
And it doesn't cost 2 to 4 times as much. So it's a better deal. You're buying more nutrition,
right,
for less money.
I like the organic also because the genetically engineered foods are not marked. And
right,
with the organic, I know I'm not getting the genetically engineered foods, which,
well,
have a,
yes,
bad history.
With two exceptions to that. That's soy and corn. Organic soy and organic corn are now substantially contaminated with genetically modified.
Oh.
So I don't consider those a food anymore, and I have cut soy and,
mm-hmm,
corn out,
mm-hmm,
of my diet.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, there was soy was already 6% organic soy was already 6% contaminated with genetically modified, and the last number I saw, we were already up to 12%, and and that will continue to grow with each passing year,
right?
To where eventually it'll just it's all going to be it's a horrible thing we're doing now, and with no oversight. There's no real laws governing this. There's nobody really looking at it. It's crazy. This is one of the stupidest experiments we've ever done in the history of the world, is these genetically modified foods.
Right, right. Do you recommend specific supplements, or is this dependent upon the deficiencies that are identified in the particular individual, or how does
it work? Well, supplements, we all need supplements today, and that's the horrible truth.
Mm-hmm.
And one reason, of course, is that the food is now so deficient in nutrition. We've stripped the soils of minerals. Linus Pauling once said that you can trace every disease back to a mineral deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, every American has mineral deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you some examples to for the audience to understand this. Go to the store and buy a carrot. The carrot you purchase today, you've got to eat four of them to get the same magnesium
mm-hmm.
you got in one carrot 50 years ago due to the depletion of the soils. And almost all Americans today are deficient in magnesium.
Right.
You've got to eat 10 to 20 carrots today to get the same zinc you got in one carrot 50 years ago. And almost every American is deficient in zinc. These are critical deficiencies.
Right.
So this is what we're up against, supplementation is now a necessity. And even a few years ago, the National Academy of Sciences came out with a report, and they said that even if you eat a good diet, it is no longer possible to get the nutrition you need,
mm-hmm.
and we must supplement.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings us into a whole new problem. Most supplements are junk. In fact, as a chemist, there's about four dozen people in the country that really know how to put a vitamin pill together and make it work. And I'm one of them. I'm a consultant to vitamin companies, and I'm an expert in vitamin chemistry. So I make my own vitamins now because it's a zoo out there.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a multivitamin, almost half of all the brands of multivitamins out there don't even dissolve on time to be of any use to the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And then even the ones that do dissolve, a lot of them are so toxic that they do you harm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a zoo to find good products. And I've written a report on this, by the way, that's available free of charge to anybody who wants it. And it's called The Roadmap to Choosing Supplements. And I got to tell you, you go into a store and you look at all those supplements, it's bewildering.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a roadmap. And here it is, free of charge. All you have to do is go to my website, which is beyondhealth.com. That's two words stuck together, beyond and health, beyondhealth.com. And right on the front page, there's a button that says free reports. Click on that button and download that report, The Roadmap to Choosing Supplements. It is really worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it's available free. And also, there's a little mini newsletter available for free right
mm-hmm.
on that front page as well. And you can sign up for that. So it's an enormous amount of information available
yeah.
at beyondhealth.com.
Well, there's a lot that you've talked about that people need to do, but it probably is overwhelming to someone who does not take supplements, who's not on a somewhat organic diet, who doesn't know about detoxing. What would you recommend for people to start out slowly to make some changes in their life, or how would they go about doing this?
Well, fortunately, in Never Be Fat Again, we actually have, in the back of the book, a six-week program for implementing this. And so you start out slowly and just do one thing at a time. It is a little overwhelming, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you just do one thing at a time and just keep on doing them, pretty
mm-hmm.
soon you'll be living a very, very good, healthy life. We'll switch brands of toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a brand that is not toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Switch brands of shampoo. I mean, how difficult is that? It's real simple. And then when you're buying foods, instead of buying white rice, we'll buy brown rice.
Mm-hmm.
That's real simple.
Right.
Instead of buying corn oil and soybean oil, and these are toxic oils, buy high-quality olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
See, so these are simple choices that anybody can make
right.
that will enhance your health.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds daunting on the front end, but it really isn't.
Right.
It's just a series of very simple choices.
Mm-hmm. Well, Raymond, would you like to tell the listeners what other products you have to offer and how they can reach you?
Well, yes, absolutely. You can reach me, of course, through beyondhealth.com. And if you, I'm also the author of a book called Never Be Sick Again. And so if anyone would like to have copies of these books, by the way, they're available at Borders and Barnes & Noble and Amazon. But if you buy a copy from Beyond Health, and I can give you the phone number for Beyond Health, via the same price as the bookstore, I'll give you a free one-year subscription to my newsletter, Beyond Health News. This is one of the top newsletters in the country, and you get a free one-year subscription just by buying a book. So here's the number to call, 800-250-3063. Give you that again, 800-250-3063, and get either of those books, and you get a free one-year subscription to my newsletter. And if you go to beyondhealth.com, there is a wealth of information on there. It's just you go through the free articles, go through the radio shows. There even is an interview with me right on the front page. So there's a wealth of information. I highly recommend you do it. It's a whole new way of looking at health and disease.
Mm-hmm. And don't you have some other books?
Well, we have books available at mm-hmm. Beyond Health, but the two books that I've authored are the Never Be Sick Again and
mm-hmm.
Never Be Fat Again, and now I'm working on a brand new book on how to cure cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So many people read Never Be Sick Again and went home and cured their terminal cancer
mm-hmm.
that it became pretty obvious that curing cancer was pretty simple. So now I'm writing a whole book on it.
Well, when you get that book done, Raymond, we'll have you back because that's an interest of mine. I used, as I mentioned to you earlier, a holistic approach. So I got into physical, mental, spiritual relationships, politics, and environment as the six aspects of care for myself. And I'm very interested in the herbal treatments, and I get probably 4 or 5 emails each month from people who have cancer, who have started traditional treatment but want some alternative things to add to it. And I've developed an ebook, and I'm doing a recording of that ebook. But I probably will plan maybe a month of programs on cancer because it is so prevalent in the population.
Well, I have articles that I've written on cancer that are on my website, beyondhealth.com.
Mm-hmm.
Just go there, click on the article archives, and there's a couple of articles there. One of those articles, we have two professors of medicine tell us that it was the finest single thing they'd ever read on the subject of cancer. So cancer is easy to cure, folks, and it's easy to prevent. And in fact, I'd be happy to come back anytime
mm-hmm.
and talk about how you turn cancer on and how you turn it off.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, this has been very interesting, Raymond, and I thank you for joining us tonight. And I will call on you again when we get closer to the month that I'm planning to have on cancer discussion.
Well, it's a pleasure. You're a very gracious host, and God bless you for the work you're doing, because this is really an incredible contribution to people and to learn these things. You're giving them the gift of health, the gift of knowledge, and that's what they need. And I know how difficult it is because I have a radio show of my own, so I know what it takes to do it, and you're doing it, and bless you.
Well, thank you, Raymond.